tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 8th of April, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, today we're going to take a look at illegal migration. Of course, illegal migration isn't the biggest problem. The largest problem is legal migration. Illegal migration is only about 10% of the legal migration, but with the illegal migration, you are more likely to get the criminal-minded. If you have legal migration, people have to get visas, they have to have a job that they're coming to, or they have to be students. Illegal immigration, it can literally just be any old criminal that wishes to come to Europe because he can see that he's going to be able to make more money in Europe than he is going to be able to make from pickpocketing or thieving or whatever he's doing in Africa. Now, I can, I've told this many times, but I was in a Middle Eastern country probably about 20 years ago, and I was playing drums with the street musicians, and I got quite friendly with them, and I asked them what their community was like in Britain, and they said, don't have anything to do with them, have nothing to do with them. They are all the criminals that we don't want in our own country, have left here to go to your country. And that was straight from the horse's mouth. And I mean, if you think about it, you think, well, nationalist-minded people, nationalists are the best kind of people because they put other people's needs ahead of their own. Nationalist-minded people are going to stay in the country that they're from and they're going to try and build up their country. The people that are just trying to take whatever they can from the community, they're soon going to exhaust the resources where they are. They're going to make themselves unpopular. What are they going to do after that? Well, one of the options that's open for them is to break into Europe and claim to be needing asylum from the country that you're from. I mean, it could even be that they've broken the law in the country that they're from. And because they've broken the law, then there might be a risk of execution. And if there's a risk of execution, then you have to allow them into Britain, don't you? I mean, this is one of the reasons why we don't deport the rapists and the pedophiles that come from places like Afghanistan, because we know that if they went back to Afghanistan, the government in Afghanistan would hang them for their crimes. And that, so that becomes a reason why we don't deport these people. I mean, it's really quite scandalous. So it's the numbers that are the problem with legal migration, and with illegal migration, it's the risk of criminality, particularly the risk of sex crimes, that is the concern. Now, I talked about Libya before and how the place has been completely destroyed, basically, since the fall of Muammar Gaddafi, since we went in there and supposedly liberated the country. That we didn't talk that much about the migrants that are there. And we now have a new report which is showing us what's going on there. And this article comes from Breitbart. The headline is, "Nearly 1 million migrants in Mediterranean route hub Libya, UN agency reports." The International Organization for Migration, the IOM, has reported that there are nearly 1 million migrants currently residing in the North African state of Libya, many of whom will undoubtedly attempt to cross the Mediterranean and reach European soil. I mean, the vast majority will be wanting to do that. They won't be wanting to stay in Libya, where they're at risk of being enslaved. They will be wanting to cross the ocean and get to Europe, where they know that they will be looked after, and there is very little chance that they will be sent back to Africa, particularly if they say, well, I'm wanted for a crime in Africa, they might chop my hands off, or or they might execute me, or they could say that they're homosexual, for instance. And in some African countries, if you are caught engaging in homosexual acts, then you'd get a serious punishment. So these people can just say to the authorities in Europe, well, I'm a homosexual, if I go back to my country, they're going to lock me up for that. And it's not illegal in your country, will you protect me? And the European country has to accept them, effectively. And this is the problem there with these asylum laws that we've created for ourselves. I mean, they were created after the Second World War, when we had lots of European refugees. European refugees are not likely to form rape gangs and go after the host country, go after the children of the host country, for instance. If you have European refugees, they're not going to cause the same problems that you get with black and Middle Eastern refugees. Certainly not rape gangs. I mean, that's a modern phenomenon. According to the EU-funded Info Migrants website, the IOM's Displacement Tracking Matrix program in Libya identified 939,638 migrants living within Libya as of the end of 2025, the largest figure on record. And that's only the ones that they were able to track. I mean, it might even be that there's double that number there. It might be that there's 2 million there, because they were unable to track many of them. They didn't know anything about them. These are just the ones that they know about. However, the site noted that the real figure is likely much higher, given that many illegals are simply unaccounted for, and that the east of the country is currently led by a rival government, the so-called Government of National Stability, making the gathering of accurate migration statistics in the region more difficult. So they've actually only done half the country anyway. So it could be that there's 4 million then that are waiting there to come into Europe. It might be that the figure is drastically higher than what it actually is here. And the fact that they now have two different governments claiming to be the legitimate government of Libya. I mean, they had a stable government under Muammar Gaddafi for about 20 years, maybe longer than that. He really improved just about every measure of health, or every measure of having a decent life was increased under Gaddafi. They could all read and write. They were all given houses. They were given a share of the oil proceeds. And now look at the place. It's just a hub for people desperate to leave Africa, where slavery is legal once again. Regardless of the nearly a million migrants logged as being in the country, the largest groups hail from the fellow African nations of Chad, Egypt, Niger, Nigeria, and Sudan. They are mostly located in large urban centres, including in cities such as Benghazi, Misrata, and Tripoli, the United Nations agency said. And what's happening to them there? Well, they're being put in slave markets, aren't they? Following the 2011 civil war and the killing of former leader Muammar Gaddafi, Libya devolved into a failed state, leaving room for unscrupulous people smuggling networks to set up shop along the country's coastline and helping transport hundreds of thousands to Europe. Since then, I would say it's probably over a million that they've transported into Europe. Didn't they say that a million arrived just from this Syrian migration crisis that we had? Didn't they say that Angela Merkel allowed a million refugees into Germany? So I'd say there's probably a lot more than hundreds of thousands that they're talking about here. And under Gaddafi, there was none of this. There were no people smugglers there under Gaddafi. All of this has happened as a result of us destroying that country. I mean, I can still remember David Cameron and Nicolas Sarkozy and Angela Merkel all going over there and praising the Libyans and how they'd had their democratic revolution and now they were going to have democracy. And within a matter of months, it had just devolved into the world's largest slave market and deportation route for leaving, or debarkation route for leaving Africa and invading Europe. Migrants are often put on unseaworthy vessels or on boats with just enough fuel to reach halfway across the sea from the African coastline in a bid to divert costs onto pro-open borders NGO boats, which will often pick up the migrants and transport them the rest of the way to Europe. And indeed, they organise with these NGOs. They say where their dinghy is going to be. They arrange where the dinghy is going to be picked up. And when we hear of Keir Starmer saying he's going to be tough on the gangs and they're going to go after the gangs, well, why haven't they gone after any of these NGOs then? I mean, they are part of this network. They are the ones that arrange to pick these people up from their boats in the middle of the ocean, and they then ferry them into Europe. Why aren't they going after these NGOs? As far as I'm aware, there's only one politician that went after them, and that was Matteo Salvini. And as soon as Matteo Salvini was out of office, they turned the tables on him and tried to prosecute him for kidnapping, saying that he had kidnapped one of these boats by not allowing it to dock in Italy. I think eventually it was thrown out of court. But it's literally only Matteo Salvini that's actually gone after these non-governmental organisations that are involved in this. Surely they are part of this criminal gang network. They are the ones that the governments should be going after. The journey is often perilous, however, with at least 2,185 migrants recorded as having drowned to death while trying to reach Europe from Libya or other northern African nations. Again, the true figure is likely much higher, with many simply going missing without a trace. I mean, surely they've got no hope of stopping this, have they? If they're willing to risk death, they're willing to risk like 2,000 of them die trying to make this journey, then quite clearly the magnet or the prize that they think is awaiting them in Europe is so big, so worth having, that they're willing to risk dying for it. The only way you're going to stop this is to remove that prize. You just have to say, well, none of you are getting in. If you come here, we'll just take you back to Libya, drop you off at Libya again. And until they do that, they're going to keep coming, aren't they? Or you could say, well, if you come to Europe, we're just going to put you in prison. We'll just keep you in prison. And we'll just have to open up more prisons. And instead, we say, oh, no, that would go against their human rights. And we have to put them up in a hotel. We have to give them all these things, equal rights to all the other people that actually live in the country, even though they haven't done anything to help create the country, and they're just there to take from the country. The way to stop this is to just deport them. So you're not setting foot in Europe. We'll come pick your boat up and we'll just take you straight back to Libya and drop you off in Libya. If they say, I'll be at risk in Libya, you shouldn't have gone to Libya in the first place then, should you? You shouldn't have left Chad, or you shouldn't have left Niger or any of these other countries that they say that the majority of these people are coming from. Even before migrants set sail on the dangerous journey, they have often experienced atrocities within Libya, with the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights reporting last month that migrants are forcibly rounded up, abducted, separated from their families, arbitrarily arrested and detained, and transferred without due process to a mixture of official, unofficial, or illegal detention facilities. And the bizarre thing about this is they know that this is what's going to happen to them, and yet they think that is preferable to staying in their own country with their own people. They're that desperate to get out from Africa, to get away from all the other Africans that they're living with. They're willing to risk all of that, and they're willing to risk drowning in a boat coming across the ocean to escape from their own people. Why would we allow these people into Europe in large numbers? They're just going to turn Europe into the same place as Africa, aren't they, if we have enough numbers of them? Over here, we're already starting to see a problem with litter everywhere in Britain. It's already starting to look like a shanty town in some places with the amount of litter. If you import third world people into your country in large numbers, they will turn your country into a third world country, or it will at least resemble that. And the bizarre thing is, why are they so desperate to get away from their own people? You know, they will risk being abducted, separated from their families, arrested, detained, transferred without due process, enslaved, dying on these boats. They're willing to risk all of that if it means that they can get away from the people that they actually live with, get away from their own people. It's almost like self-hatred, isn't it? They further face patterns of human rights violations and abuses perpetrated with impunity against migrants, asylum seekers and refugees in Libya, such as human trafficking, murder, sexual violence and torture, the OHCHR reported. And the other argument is, well, it's just other Africans in Libya, So this is effectively what Africans do to other Africans. Again, why would we want to import the sort of people that carry out these atrocities into our country? It's madness. The apparent surge in the number of migrants in Libya comes amidst increasing concern across Europe of another potential migrant crisis spurred by the conflict in the Middle East. And of course, that's the other issue now. We're going to have refugees from Iran that are coming in now after the Iranian war for Israel, the war against Iran. We had the war against Syria for Israel. We had the war against Iraq for Israel. War against Afghanistan for Israel, and now we have the war against Iran for Israel. And where do all these refugees go after we start bombing them? And they've obviously got a hate in their hearts for Europe because Europe is the country that's bombing them. Well, they come to Europe, don't they? And our politicians let them in, even though there is a risk that these people will have hatred in their heart for the European people because of what the European governments have done to their country. EU Chief Ursula von der Leyen told member state leaders earlier this month that even aside from the potential migrant crisis in Iran or Lebanon, worrying developments are being recorded along the central and eastern Mediterranean routes, with a sharp increase in departures from Libya. Again, the only way to stop these people from departing from Libya is to say, we're just going to tow your boat straight back to Libya. The reason why they won't do that is because they say, well, look at all these problems that they're facing in Libya. Look at all these risks. But again, that's not our problem, is it? They're the ones that put themselves at risk by going to Libya in the first place. Surely we could just take them back to Libya and make the argument that, well, they are the ones that wanted to be in Libya. They travelled there in the first place, even though they knew that there was going to be these risks there. So we'll just take you back there. I mean, it might even help Libya. We could do some deals with whichever government it is that's claiming to control that part there with the coast. We could do some deals with them. We could give them some investment, and we could have an arrangement with them that they just accept these people back. And, you know, I think that would probably solve the problem, wouldn't it? If they were just sent back to Libya, knew that they would have no chance of getting into Europe. Well, I want to have another look at another article here. And this is just one of many that I see every day about the asylum seekers once they actually get here and the sort of things that they get up to. And of course, there's been murders, there's been rapes, horrific things. And today, this one isn't a murder and it isn't a rape, but I think it is indicative of the sort of things that you see these alleged asylum seekers doing. This is from GB News, and the headline is, a Sri Lankan asylum seeker jailed for 16 months for abusive behaviour towards young girl. An asylum seeker from Sri Lanka has been jailed for 16 months for telling a young girl to get her tits out and exposing himself to staff at the hotel where he was being accommodated. So this is the way that they repay us after we put them up in four-star hotels and give them their food and we give them spending money. And what do? Well, they go out and they get drunk and they start sexually assaulting the staff, basically. I mean, he ended up exposing himself to her as well. But he starts off by calling for her to get her tits out. And then he increases that to exposing himself. I mean, this comes after we had protests complaining about the food in the hotel, not this hotel, but other hotels where the asylum seekers have been, a killing that took place. Somebody was stabbed because the accommodation wasn't good enough for them. As I say, this is the sort of problem that comes with the illegal migration. With the legal migration, you have the problem of the numbers and the increase in the price of houses, not enough room in the sewage pipes for all the sewage, not enough room on the roads for all the cars. Those are the sort of problems that you get with legal migration. With illegal migration, you get the sort of people that are going to expose themselves at the least to the staff members and murder them at the very worst, the staff members, that is. Sukirtan Changrasha was convicted following a trial at Portsmouth Crown Court of one count of exposure following the incident at an asylum hotel in Southampton, Hampshire on August 15th, 2025. The 38-year-old also pleaded guilty to two charges of assault against two members of staff at the hotel. And this is the sort of thing that the kind-hearted people that are working at these hotels, because they are kind-hearted. I mean, they see these people as desperately needing our help. They may not speak our language. They're on their own in another country. And the female urge to nurture takes over, and they want to care for these people. And the result of that is they end up being assaulted. I mean, you can't change women the way they think. I mean, they feel sorry for people. They nurture. It's because they're supposed to be the mother of children, and that emotion is supposed to be directed to their children. If you have strange men on the shores, miles away from their home countries, then they're going to be concerned for them as well. So you've got kind-hearted people that work in these hotels, and they just get attacked by the people that they're being kind-hearted to. This is why you have to have men controlling these sorts of things, because men think logically, women think emotionally. He pleaded guilty to using abusive or threatening language in the incident involving the girl in Kingston Cemetery, Portsmouth, on September 15th, 2025. The court heard how a man walking with his two children heard the defendant, who was drunk at the time, tell a girl who was walking nearby, "Get your tits out." After the incident, the young girl was left in a teary state. And this sort of thing is becoming more and more common. I mean, you get the schoolgirls that are walking back home after school, and they'll be propositioned and shouted at by illegal asylum seekers. You see them hanging around outside swimming pools, looking in at the women there. I've seen footage of them just standing around all outside, looking through the window at the girls there in their swimwear. Clearly something that they've never seen before. And it's harassment of these young girls is what it is. The offences were committed in breach of a conditional discharge imposed on the defendant for two offences of assaulting two police constables and making threats to kill, the court heard. So this wasn't his first offence, and you have to ask yourself, how long had he been in the country? How long had he actually been there at this hotel before he started assaulting people? He was also convicted of shoplifting offences from nearby John Lewis and M&S stores, and I'm surprised they actually went after him. I mean, they don't normally investigate unless it's more than £200 worth of goods that have been stolen. I mean, this is why Sadiq Khan is able to say, well, we don't have very much crime in London, it's gone down. And the reason for that is because they no longer investigate a large number of crimes. That's why the crime rate seems to be going down. It's not that it's actually going down, it's just, what's going down is the number of crimes that the police will actually investigate. During the trial into the exposure incident, the court heard how Tangrasha had come to the reception and demanded staff repair his mobile phone before throwing it at the reception desk. I mean, it just shows you how entitled these people are. They think that the white man should just do everything for them. And they get angry when he doesn't. And what is it that these people are being told Britain is like to other Indians? Well, they must be being told that these white idiots will do anything for you if you're brown. Here are the pictures of them walking around naked. Here are the pictures of the plush hotel that we're living in. Here are the pictures of the food that we're eating. And you can imagine somebody seeing all that, because obviously they're going to brag about things to their friends back home, aren't they? They're going to say, look at what a great time I'm having. And the people back home are going to want to come to Britain, and they're going to get here. And then they get given a mobile phone by the government again. Just being given a mobile phone in a place like India, you know, that is just unheard of, isn't it? The government doesn't give you a mobile phone. Government doesn't give the British people a mobile phone. But it will give them a smartphone if you're an asylum seeker. So then they start throwing it at the staff because the staff aren't able to fix it for them. And I guess he thinks that that's the way that you get the British people to do things. He became abusive to staff and said that he was a strong man and the staff were small men from India and Pakistan and that they should respect him. So again, this tells us that the people that we've actually got working in some of these hotels now are also migrants. And there was court stories, news stories a while back about how there were illegal migrants working for the civil service to do with immigration. And letting people, giving them immigration status, giving them settled status, when they didn't have settled status, and the people that were doing that were illegal immigrants themselves. So we've now got Indians and Pakistanis working as hotel staff in the hotel with Indians and Pakistanis in it, all being paid for by the British taxpayer. Prosecutor Jack Furness said he then pulled his trousers down. The first time he left his underwear on and lifted his top up. Staff told him to stop, and he did. But a short while later, he pulled his trousers down and his underwear. He exposed himself in front of multiple other people. The defendant accepts exposing his genitals, and you can be sure of that from the CCTV footage. The Crown says that you can be sure that he intended someone to see his genitals. Quite clearly, he's pretending that he didn't actually do this on purpose. He continued, "What is in issue is the defendant's intentions. The Crown says the defendant exposed himself in the course of being aggressive, abusive, and demeaning to members of staff. His intention must have been to cause them alarm and to distress in exposing his genitals. There is no other reason, the Crown say, to behave in that way." And bear in mind, this is after he's also shouting at the staff to get their tits out. Tangrasha, who used a Tamil interpreter during court proceedings, and how much did that cost to get him an interpreter, had first come to the UK to flee the civil war in Sri Lanka, leaving his wife and his children behind. Why did he have to flee right the way to the other side of the world to get away from Sri Lanka? I mean, what is he doing leaving his wife and children there to fend for themselves? I don't think there's much of a social security over there in Sri Lanka. How is his wife and child supposed to care for themselves? Why is it that we're having to pay for a Tamil interpreter? And part of Restore UK's policy is that they won't be providing interpreters. And it's the same as the Patriotic Alternative policy. We won't provide interpreters. If you don't speak English, then tough. And that's the way that it has to be, really, because this guy shouldn't even be in the country, let alone exposing himself to the hospital staff. And then we bend over backwards to allow him to have an interpreter so he can understand what's being said in court. And he should never have been here. He should have just been pushed back to Libya, referring to that original news story that we had earlier. That's what they should be doing. They should be pushing these boats back to Libya. The court heard how he had since suffered from mental health issues, including anxiety and depression, and drank excessively while in the UK. Well, isn't that sad? We must feel very sorry for him. He has anxiety and depression after leaving his family, travelling halfway around the world, and then being put up in a 4-star hotel in Britain. One of the security officers working at the hotel at the time of the incident, Asad Zaman, said Tangrasha had been staying there for about 5 months at the time of the incident. So he's been there for 5 months. He's already assaulted a couple of police officers, and now he's asking the girls to get their tits out, and he's exposing his genitals. And this is the way he repays the people that are putting him up in this hotel. Oh yes, and I forgot, they're throwing his mobile phone at them and demanding that they fix it for him. He told the court he got a bit aggressive, as obviously I saw his appearance. He was a bit intoxicated. He was under the impression of alcohol. You could smell that on him. He was constantly trying to bang the desk where the staff were sitting and trying to show aggression. Mr. Zaman added the staff had told them it was not their job to fix his phone, and they tried to get him to calm down. He said Tangrasha pulled his trousers down on two occasions, and on the second he had also pulled his underwear down to expose himself. Judge William Ashworth told him, "In truth, I find little or no mitigation. You are still in denial of the number of offences of which you have pleaded guilty or been convicted of, and failed to acknowledge you have repeatedly drunk to excess and committed offences as a result." So even though they have this evidence here of him exposing himself, even though he's admitted that he was exposing himself, he's still denying that he actually did that. The court heard that the prosecution had decided to offer no evidence in relation to an allegation of entering the UK illegally. Well, why didn't they prosecute him for that? However, Anthony Furs, defending, said, "No doubt the Home Office will have some questions to ask of him in due course." And of course, all he's got to say is, "Oh, well, actually, I'm a homosexual," and then they won't deport him back to India. They won't deport him anyway. Is he actually going to get sent to jail here? I think, yes, 16 months. So he could be out at the maximum after 8 months, probably 6 months, probably do 6 months in jail. and then he'll be let out. And when they let him out, they'll probably end up giving him a council house as well, I should imagine. They won't be wanting to put him back into a hotel again. He would have been through the British system by that time. So they'll probably give him a council house at the end of it. So that will be his reward. These are the reasons why we have an illegal immigration problem, because people can see that they can just come over to Britain. Everything will be done for them. If they sexually expose themselves to people, all they're going to get is a small prison sentence. I guess if he was to do that in India, he'd probably have a serious punishment for something like that. If you think in Muslim countries, something like that, I mean, you could be hanging from a crane for doing something like that. But in Britain, you're lucky to get a prison sentence, really, and not a lengthy prison sentence. I mean, that's not even as much of a prison sentence as you can get for making "it's okay to be white" stickers. And as I say, there's a solution to this. There's a solution to this illegal immigration problem is to do a deal with the Libyan authorities and just tow the boats back to Libya. And if they say, "Oh yes, but the Libyans are going to abuse these people," well, they shouldn't have gone to Libya then in the first place, should they? If the Libyans are going to abuse them, it's their fault for going to Libya. If they end up being turned into slaves there, that's not our problem. They are adults. They can make their own decisions for themselves, and they went to Libya. So that's the solution, I think. Just do a deal with the Libyan authorities, tow the boats back to Libya, and forget about them. Then they'll stop coming, won't they? Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.